Chairman Cooper, it is now bedtime.
Good evening. We'll call the meeting to order. Please stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Let me go into some announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number of Zoom or Zoom webinar. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting, the members of the public using either the call-in or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. We do have some people this evening in person, and you know about the cards out on the deck. Table out there for speaking. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee may then come to a consensus to move this item to the board or not. With that, we will continue with the meeting, and we're on item two, public comments. Those are the many members of the public wishing to be outside.
Seeing none.
Seeing anything? Okay, and I see since I missed last month's meeting, but the meetings before that were very short. But I see that Courtney is making up for that now. We knew it was going to catch up with us here soon. So,
and what excuse is that?
It's here. So, item three, the quarterly safety presentation. And with that, he was doing it tonight.
Rebecca.
Oh, okay. Rebecca, are you there? Oh, there you are up there.
Rebecca, we can't hear you.
Can't? Okay.
We can hear you now.
Now you can hear me. Okay. Not sure if that was because of me or the room.
Good evening.
Good evening. Can everybody see the presentation?
Yes.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you. So good afternoon, board members and E&O committee members. I'm Rebecca Lustig, Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor for SCV Water, and this is your quarterly Environmental Health and Safety Update. And this is for the third quarter of the 2023-2024 fiscal year, covering the time period from January 1st through March 31st of 2024. Next slide, please. These are our routine safety, environmental health and safety activities. So during this quarter, safety staff engaged in our standard safety tailgate meetings, which we have weekly, work site and facility inspections, or our monthly audits, where we check out facilities for the fire extinguishers, safety first aid kits, eyewash stations, general housekeeping, emergency lighting, and go through and ID any safety hazards such as slips, trips, and fall hazards, material storage, safety exits, and equipment being present and accessible, and check to see if any hazardous waste needs to be removed, scheduled to be removed. We also have our safety committee meetings every other month. Construction meetings, both pre-construction and ongoing construction projects, including job walks, and new hire safety and emergency orientations. So it was a full quarter. We had about 17 new people, full staff, full-time staff, temporary safety or student interns rather. So this process introduces them to the safety department. We collect information for their safety equipment, PPE, and training needs, and give them their initial overview of the injury and illness prevention plan, and give them information on the safety resources that we have in Aquifer, such as forms to report an incident, safety manual, and how to sign on to courses in Vector Solutions for online safety courses. We also do the in-person life safety and emergency evacuation orientation. And we also had some routine regulatory compliance activities, which we will go over on the next slide. So for the third quarter, environmental health and safety trainings, projects, and activities, for this quarter, January, we had several in-person defensive driving classes. So we held four sessions of these classes in January and two in February. And Lee Patton from JPIA, the senior risk control advisor that's assigned to us, performed those trainings. EH&S staff and op staff at Rio did the annual test for the chlorine emergency shutdown, and everything worked as it should. So that was a successful test. By early January, we were ready to submit our OSHA 300 summary. That's for our injury and illness data. So this gets submitted electronically to OSHA through the injury tracking application, and we also are required to post the summary at all work sites. It's required to be posted by February 1st, but we had it done very early in January. We had only four reportable injury cases in the 2023 calendar year, and compared to the California Water Utilities recordable rate of 3.2, we were at a 1.9. So we were well below the total recordable injury and illness case rate for California Water Utilities. So that's pretty good too. February, as I mentioned, we did some defensive driving classes. We tried to get everybody who could potentially drive an agency vehicle in to take that class. We facilitated quarterly inspections for the overhead gantry cranes with Kona Crane. And environmental health and safety staff performed a job hazard assessment for a project over at Rio, which was for cleaning, and it's a maintenance activity for the clear well covers at Rio Vista. In March, we facilitated the annual respirator fit testing and annual audiograms. So we did something a little different this time, where we had the same vendor come in to do both of those assessments, or both of those testing on the same day for the staff. So we thought it might be a little less disruptive to staff if they only needed to come in for one day for their hearing test and their fit test, instead of having to come in on two separate occasions. And so that was pretty successful. We also met with the LA County COOPA inspector at the BFDF facility, the baseball field disinfection facility, for a routine COOPA inspection for hazardous material storage, and we had no violations for that inspection. Next slide, please. So here we see the third quarter safety metrics, our leading indicators. We have a summary of meetings, and also the EH&S staff conducted or facilitated some environmental health or safety inspections at sites during this quarter. For meetings, we're seeing that there's an uptick of meetings over the past quarters. So we have our safety tailgates, the safety committee meeting, we have compliance trainings, we have the construction meetings, the job walks, we have meetings with op staff for job hazard analysis or job hazard assessments and site hazard analysis, and also emergency preparedness meetings, which we're going to see on another slide in a few slides. We also lead the agency's incident management team, who has a meeting quarterly, and we participate in the agency's security work group, which meets quarterly. We also have monthly safety inspections. We accompany vendors for quarterly inspections for the cranes, and also coordinate with the buildings and ground staff for inspection of the fire suppression systems. We assist the vendor that comes in to do our designated operator inspection for our underground fuel tank at Rio. We accompany COOPA inspections, and we also do the special request inspections or hazard analysis for site. For specific jobs or specific sites. Next slide, please. Okay, this is our graph for the recordable and reportable incidents for the third quarter. So reportable is any major injury, hospitalization, loss of eye, fatality, and recordables are any injury that occurs that requires medical attention beyond first aid or resulted in days away, restricted, or transferred duties. And we did not have any of those in this quarter. Next slide, please. Vehicle safety metrics for the quarter. Doing pretty good here. As I mentioned earlier, we had numerous in-person defensive driving classes led by JPIA, Representative Lee Patton. We just had one incident in March, which involved an agency vehicle. It did not involve an injury or another vehicle. Staff was actually backing up in one of those transit vans, and there was a low-hanging branch that was not visible through the windows, the mirror, and it was too high for the backup cameras, but it was just at the right height where it broke one of the windows in the van. But that was the only vehicle incident that we had for that quarter. Next slide, please. Emergency preparedness activities for the third quarter. Our routine alert media testing to test our emergency notification system. We are also currently working on the agency's risk and resilience assessment and emergency response plan recertification. So as you may recall, this is a compliance activity for us for the America's Water Infrastructure Act. We first submitted ours and got it approved in 2020, but there's a every five years it needs to be recertified. So we review our risk and resilience assessment, or our RRA, and that is due by March 2025. And then 6 months after that, any of those items that are noticed in that risk and resilience assessment would need to be incorporated into the emergency response plan if there's anything that needs to be updated. We're actually currently updating the ERP anyway to align with the Division of Drinking Water template. So we're already in the process of that. Some meetings here, Local Emergency Planning Committee, the Region 1 meeting. The date on here, December 13th, I apologize, that was the date for the second quarter meeting. The third quarter meeting we attended on February 21st, so I apologize for not updating that. We also have attended the meeting with the City of Santa Clarita Emergency Preparedness Group that met March 21st, and the agency's Incident Management Team quarterly meeting occurred on January 18th. We also did some updates to the agency's internal SharePoint aquifer. There's a specific page now for emergency resources, so all agency staff has access to emergency preparedness and response plans. The emergency action plans are all online. We also have links for federal and California, so FEMA and Cal OES training resources and CERT resources, and information on alert media, little training videos. So we just want to kind of boost that transparency and accessibility of emergency resources for staff. Next slide, please. And finally, upcoming activities for safety, environmental health, and emergency trainings. So we're continuing to do our routine EH&S activities, our tailgates, our inspections and meetings, basically keeping up with our ongoing efforts to keep our best-in-class safety culture here at SCV Water. We are currently, we just finished up some of our forklift training. So this is a forklift safety training and evaluations. This is a compliance training, needs to be done every 3 years. And in April did some asbestos pipe, the annual refresher and initial training for new staff on that. In May, we are going to be hosting some Stop the Bleed classes. This is a trauma active shooter class that's provided to us without cost by Henry Mayo. And in June, we are getting some of our new staff get their CPR first aid certifications, and we are also beginning the chlorine facility's internal compliance audit. So that's a 3-year compliance requirement right there. And it is not listed here, but we also have a workplace violence prevention plan. This is a new requirement due to changes to the California Labor Code that necessitated the creation of this new plan. Needs to be in place by July 1st, and its requirements are enforced by Cal OSHA. So we are developing a plan for that and then developing a training to go along with it. And that is the end of my presentation. I thank you for listening, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Very good. Thank you, Rebecca. Liz, questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Seeing none from the committee? Mr. Orzovsky.
Ms. Lustig, can you expand on the City of Santa Clarita Emergency Preparedness Group? Who are the participants, and what were some of the discussion topics during your meetings?
So for this meeting, the participants kind of change up a little bit, but pretty standard is us, the city emergency coordinator for the city of Santa Clarita. There's usually somebody there from the fire department, local fire department. There's somebody there from the sheriff's office. There's usually a representative from Henry Mayo. There's a representative from the school districts. There's a representative from Edison. So basically, sort of a collection of people that come around and just we kind of give updates on what we're doing internally with our own departments as far as emergency response and preparedness. So we talk about what plans we're coming up with, what exercises we're planning to do, and just sort of share some ideas. And then there's some time during and after the meetings where we can connect and see if any of those activities and tasks align with each other, that we can provide some support or some information to each other.
Okay, understood. And as far as communications during emergencies, do we have any forms of communications that all the partners that are participating in that loop have access to? Same radio, same frequencies.
That has been a point of discussion, but at the moment, not all of the groups have the same communication to communicate directly with each other. At this time, the main way that that communication would happen would be through when either the city or the county will establish an emergency operations center and then would send representatives. And that's how information would get disseminated. So you'd have a liaison or representative in that office that would then relay information to their departments or to their agencies.
Okay,
But everybody
understood.
kind of uses different communication systems, so that's a difficult one to coordinate.
All right. Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Questions?
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Real quick, Rebecca, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for keeping the hammer down on the emphasis of safety in our agency. I think it's really important. And from the looks of the records that you're compiling, looks like staff is doing a heck of a good job. And so just keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to say thank you to Aaron and Joe, who are my staff. They are amazing, and I wouldn't be able to do any of this without them. You either, Keith.
When I say you, I mean you.
Peterson, anything?
Yeah, just one quick question since I saw the sign there, Stop the Bleed. I've never heard that program before, other than a first aid class. What is that?
That is actually, I'm not sure how new it is, but so Stop the Bleed is basically it's being hosted by the Henry Mayo, the Newhall Hospital, and it is in coordination with the, see if I can get this right, it's the American College of Surgeons. So they put together this training, and it has directly to do with workplace violence, active shooter, and sort of that next step above just basic first aid. And so this was actually came up during one of those emergency meetings with the city, was you had some representatives from the hospital there, and they let us know that they were providing this service, and it is nurses that are trained to give this class, and it's free of charge. So we took it upon ourselves to book them for some classes. I can let Joe give you a little more detail on it because he sat through the first class that actually happened on the 30th, but I'm not scheduled to take this until next week, so I'll give you details later if you would like.
That'd be fine. We don't need to have all the details.
All the gory details, yeah.
Any other questions? Rebecca, just one question. For when we establish our emergency response center, do we have a structure? Who's in charge? Who's the operations? Who's the logistics? Do we have that?
So, yeah, so that's one of the things that we are working on with the incident management team is that we've identified a place for emergency operations center, and we've identified our chiefs in each of those sections. So incident commander, the primary, secondary, and then the section chiefs for finance, logistics, operations. So we do have a structure for that set up right now, and we're working on developing a more robust training plan for each of those sections, plus for all of the staff that's going to be reporting to them.
And maybe our next quarterly meeting, could you just give us a copy of what your incident command command structure is?
Yes, I can.
Who's the incident commander? Who's the operations chief? Who's the logistics chief? All that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
I can give you a rundown right now if you'd like. I can just pull up the plan and kind of go over that with you.
No, let's do it next month.
Okay. I'll have it on a slide.
That's very good. Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, moving on, item four, Mr. Mayo. And I guess that's why Rochelle's here, to see how much money we want to spend.
Thank you very much, Chair Cooper. My name is Courtney Mayo. I'm Chief Engineer for Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency. And we're here today, as you already mentioned, to discuss the revised fiscal year 24-25 budget. As you know, we're in year two of the two-year approved budget. And we do not have automatic rollover of unused funds for our project, so we have to revise our budget to account for changes in schedule or project priority, and that's what we're bringing before you today. I do want to apologize for not having the presentation in the packet and for the public. We normally try to do that as much as possible, but this is a document that has been in flux for a while. We're trying to coordinate with the funding sources. And as you'll see, we even have a slide that is still listed as draft. We will be meeting again for the FNA meeting on May 20th and have another opportunity for the public to see this, as well as plan on going to the full board in the first meeting of June. And both of those meetings should have the full PowerPoint in those presentations for people to review and comment on. But we do our best to try to put that up front. Next slide, please. We conveniently push that way off the bottom so you can barely see it, but I'll read it right on the bottom. It's the $175,081,000 for the combined debt financed and CIP PAYGO budgets. And this is by category. So this is the big scary slide. It's the one right up front before we get into all the details of all the projects, but I wanted to be clear that it's really across all of the departments that we are doing this work. There's a lot of work to be done. And a lot of the stuff that has increased, as you'll see, we're going to do a comparison to what was actually approved in the two-year budget and what it is now. A lot of them are carryovers from the prior year that we didn't get to, mainly due to construction delays or other similar type of delays. There are a few project reprioritizations and a few projects that snuck in there. And we'll go over those as well. Next slide, please. So looking at just the PAYGO budget for the fiscal year, again, looking at by category, you can see we increased by about $4 million from what was approved in fiscal year 24-20, or in the two-year budget, to what we are proposing in the revised budget. A lot of this comes into the meter and meter infrastructure category, and then we have some lowering in other categories. So just a little bit of a restructuring in there of some of the funds, and then ramping up of some of the replacements of those items. We will get, over the next several slides, a lot more into the detail. This is kind of giving the big overview before we go into the weeds. Next slide, please. This is what I said. These sources of funding are in draft mode. These numbers are going to change. The numbers at the bottom don't. The 59 for the PAYGO and the 115 for the debt funded, those are pretty locked in. The WIFIA bond proceeds, some of these others may be adjusted slightly as we go forward in the funding sources. So this slide may look a little different when we come back in the FNA meeting. And then I will cover a lot more about the benefits of the WIFIA loan in a later slide when we're under debt financing, but there is a really positive to us using that mechanism to fund some of our facilities. I want to make sure I highlight that. Next slide, please. So into the details, we're going to go by each group. I know we had them by category, but it's a little easier to categorize this on the different groups that are doing the work. So this is the engineering CIP overview of the PAYGO portion. We increased from the $11 million budgeted to $21 million. Some of this is a Vista Canyon bridge crossing that came in, and there is some additional offset that we would have been paying out that I will explain on when that project comes up. And then we had a few other small projects come in that are less than $1 million that we didn't get to in the last pay cycle. And then as well as the Dean tank at Skyline Ranch, the tank is built and the developer hasn't billed us. And so the money is outstanding and that money will be needing to come through. This is a joint fair share project. So whereas we expected it to go in the 24-25 budget, we really didn't spend very much money in that year because we haven't received an invoice. We are expecting that invoice soon. We have talked to them about it, but it isn't here yet. Next slide, please. So going into the details of each of this, the Vista Canyon Bridge is a new bridge across connecting Sloan Canyon with the Vista Canyon development. This project has a proposed 16-inch ductile iron pipe that goes across and connects those two systems. We have a bay available for future recycled water, but we are not putting that in. This was a developer-required project, but the developer is no longer building the bridge. The city has taken over the bridge, and therefore the burden of this pipeline falls to us. Fortunately, there is a capacity fee credit agreement with the developer for the installation of the recycled water system that was helping offset some of the potable water use. And that capacity fee credit can be used to fund the pipeline across this bridge. We are working on a reimbursement agreement with the city, and we will be coming back in June to the full board to get approval on that reimbursement agreement and ultimately on the installation of this pipeline across the bridge to connect those two zones and keep that pipeline active. Next slide, please. So these are some of our groundwater treatment wells that we're going to be working on, specifically wells 206 and 207, preliminary planning and design of those projects. Those you can see there just on the north side of Magic Mountain. Next slide, please. These are the Dean Zone improvements, and you'll see the same slide reappear in the debt finance section because parts of it are debt finance, and they're labeled on this slide here. The portions that are related to the Sand Canyon Plaza, which is a separate pump station and separate tank. The tanks just happen to be on the exact same site, same size, so we list them here because it's easier to see how this improves the Dean Zone system. This is, again, a developer participation where the developer is required to pay their fair share of the tank project or the pump stations, or in this case, they pay 100% of their reservoir treatment because that's required for the reservoir. The advantage to the agency is we're able to resolve a deficit from a 2013 study on our storage in the Dean Zone, and the developer contributed the land and conducted environmental review. So that's a savings directly for our residents where we didn't have to do that, but we are able to get the additional storage in that zone. That tank, as you can see, is a concrete tank. The machine you see is actually doing a pre-stressed steel wrapping around the tank. That tank is built and filled with water and is currently doing the testing process. The only thing missing to put that into operation are the MCCs with the pump station, and that'll not expected until July, but we are moving forward with the first phase of the Skyline Ranch tank. So having a completed tank, you would think we would have gotten a bill by now, but we're getting there. Next slide, please. As you've seen many times, the LARC project, Los Angeles Residential Community Pipeline, we are the finance agreement and water service agreement for the LARC project are executed. The pipeline will include several residential meters requested as part of our public outreach campaign. We will advertise for bids in late May and submit final budget approval to state in late June, and then we'll seek board approval to award construction in September. Amendment to grant agreement may be required pending the outcome of the bids if they are a little more expensive than anticipated. Next slide, please. So we decided to group all of the pipeline projects. There's a kind of a blend between debt financing and PAYGO projects on the pipeline. There, some of them are still listed in the broader category of pipeline and pipeline rehabilitation because they aren't individualized yet. We don't know how we're going to group those projects. But overall, we went from about $24 million anticipated budget to about $29 billion. A lot of that was increasing based off of the current market, what we were previously anticipating the costs coming in. We're noticing the costs are coming in higher. So we're using some different strategies to do the pipelines, including doing some combining of multiple projects to make a larger project to gain the economy of scale. We're also reaching out to the contractors to see if there's anything that we can do to help get these projects in a good bidding environment and get multiple bidders on the projects. The contractors are all extremely busy. We will show you a lovely presentation probably at the next committee meeting of where we're at with development, and you'll see exactly why it's challenging for us to get contractors to bid on our public works. A lot of these pipeline projects are the difficult to work on. They're in public streets. There's other utilities. There's conflict, it's night work, you have to deal with residents and everything else, as compared to the easy developer work where it's unfinished land, you're not cutting through pavement. So between the two, it's usually preferred for the contractors to go to the easy unfinished or undeveloped land. But we're going to entice them over and get more bidders hopefully coming up. Next slide, please. So we're going to go into specifics. We do have the, in the CIP side, we did separate these out. So we have engineering projects that are run typically greater than a mile. We also have some sewer projects that we're in planning and design on. And then you have the following list of streets, the Smythe, which we are actually later today requesting to reject the bidder that we had. And instead would be combining that with the most likely with the Abdale, Maple Bay and Beech Grove Court project. But we're still evaluating that when we bring it back. You have Valencia Mark Place, McBean near Henry Mayo Hospital, and then the Vasquez pipeline. So those are what's planned for this next fiscal year from engineering. Next slide, please. From the operations group, we have their own list of projects, typically less than a mile. And we have Newhall Avenue, Vasquez Canyon, Samay. The Newhall Avenue job is an old cast iron pipe replacement. Vasquez is an alignment and size improvement going from an 8-inch to a 12-inch to help out with fire flow in that area. And then the Samay, Weinhauser, and Wiley are all size improvements for fire flow. Next slide, please. So we're going to get into the operation CIP interview or overview. And generally speaking, operations is projects that require limited engineering support, consists of several general categories, each with specific individual projects when you drill down. And a portion of each budget is held for unforeseen failures and unexpected projects so that we can keep the facilities operational. As you see a series of photos here on some of the recent work that our operations department has done, they make very clean sites. They do really good work, especially the photo on the right of the clean pipe and replacements they've done there. It's nice to see the work that they accomplish when they're out there. Next slide, please. So this is an overview of the PAYGO budget. As we mentioned, that there's a significant jump from the approved budget from last year to the revised budget now. Or the previously approved budget. A lot of this is for work that didn't get done. You're transferring of unspent funds. They're going anticipated that they will be able to spend at least $14 million, between $12 and $14 million of this. And then, as we mentioned, about $2 million is still that buffer in case of those other projects. We don't know if we will use those or not, but it's important to have the budget for those unseen categories to be able to make up the difference if something goes wrong on those sites. Next slide, please. So some of the storage tank improvements that they have coming up in the general category We do have some key projects, as in Ridge Route or Briardale or Placerita Canyon 1. We have quite a few storage structures, so picking out just a few key projects is important prioritization. And the photos kind of speak for themselves as to why those projects are a priority. Next slide, please. As you know and have approved recently, there are quite a few AMI project conversions. And so we have some grant money that is coming in that includes quite a bit of matching funds on our part, but we will be moving forward on that. The scope has changed quite a bit due to the grant obligations and staff outsourcing more of their meter replacements than anticipated due to our resources on staffing for this work. Next slide, please. So the other ones are the well improvements and replacements. These are the ones that they're just primarily doing rehabilitation due to either PFAS or specific capacity production limits. The key projects we have there are Saugus 1 and 2 and Gita.
Unless you're Italian.
Yeah. Next slide, please. So these are the other categories of the CIP. I mean, obviously, with this committee, we are primarily focused on engineering and operations, but I do want to show at least some of the categories that we have for the other departments. I'm going to just kind of go through these pretty quickly. And then if you do have specific questions, we do have representatives that can answer those questions at the end of this presentation. But this is the administration, fleet, and technology. There are some increases in costs due to the vehicle electrification and some of the other items we're trying to achieve there. That's a pretty minor increase. We had a little bit more in the technology improvements, looking at doing human capital management systems, phase 2 and 3, finance reporting tools, customer service platform, chat system, mobile application tools, data warehouse, and meter data management system. So a lot of work going on in these areas. Next slide, please. These are the water resources section. They actually went down a little bit from their prior approved budget. Slight shifting of somewhere some of the projects are going. And overall, the largest expenditures on their are under the capital planning and studies are the Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo program and the Resiliency Master Plan, which we typically would refer to as the Resiliency Initiative, probably the two biggest ones. Next slide, please. So now we go into the debt funded section, and we do have an increase in the debt funded section of a little over $20 million, about $23 million. You'll see that that's actually a little bit of a misnomer when you see how much we didn't spend on the debt funding, and you'll see that in future slides. Next slide, please. So again, a draft funding summary. I won't go into too much detail in this because I'm expecting it to change before the next meeting. And we will go into more detail probably on this on the F&A meeting and then obviously at the full board meeting. Next slide, please. So why WIFIA in our loan program? We've talked this quite a bit when we went through the WIFIA loan, but now that we're looking at the actual numbers, I think it's important to highlight that we have these large cost expenditures, and we've obviously had some delays in our projects. And one of the, beyond the benefits that are listed here on the program with the flexible repayment and lower interest rates than your traditional financing, one of the big benefits is we don't take any of that obligation until the project starts. So if we have project delays, if we have anything that is slowing our project down for any reason, we're not going to incur any of the carrying costs associated with that because we haven't started to draw the money. So we don't have any loan until we start to draw the money, as opposed to traditional bond financing, where you may have to have those costs up front. I want to highlight that because we're going to go into some of the delays we have.
How long can you delay that?
Yeah.
To draw the funds, I can give these 5 years. So you can, once the loan is completed, so long as that particular program is in that loan, you have to complete the project. Or you have to start the project within 5 years, but you can complete the project anytime after that.
Okay, next slide, please.
Yeah.
Lots of projects in the debt finance category, lots of large projects that are actually planning on going to construction, which is where you're seeing some of the larger expenditures that we have going through. Obviously, the one that most recent was the T&U wells, which is a large expenditure moving into the revised budget. We were planning on going to construction earlier, so some of that budget would have been included earlier and then carried over into the following year, but now we're going to get probably the bulk of that construction completed. I think there's only the first year of that construction is going on an 18-month project, so at least two-thirds of the project are going to be done. We'll go into more detail on all of these projects on future slides, but we did have some shifting of funds through there. Next slide, please. So overall for engineering, we have a debt finance with re-pushing some of this money around and shifting some of our projects. We actually drop about $2 million, even though we didn't spend all of it. That's because our projects last more than this year. And some of the projects that are approved and going to move forward are going to carry over into the next fiscal year as well. And so we will revisit those projects. As a matter of fact, you're going to see a lot of the slides that you saw last time we did the budget presentation because they're carryovers or they're still in progress or in construction. Next slide, please. So starting with the Backcountry Reservoir, what used to be formerly known as Magic Mountain Reservoir, but we named everything Magic Mountain there for a while, so we figured we better get more specific. This is obviously our large storage reservoir on the western portion of the agency, just part north of or southwest of the Five Point development. It's a 7.3 million gallon operational storage, total of 9 million gallon tank. We are still working with Five Point to obtain the land, but we anticipate that acquisition will occur in pretty much the first quarter of this next fiscal year. And this is expected to go into design in this next fiscal year. Next slide. Accompanied with that is the Backcountry Reservoir, which is our Backcountry pump station, which will pump up to the Backcountry Reservoir. Also a very large facility. To go along with this, we've actually, rather than using a construction manager, we've actually hired and should have them starting soon, a limited term employee that will cover the project management and some of the inspection for this site, saving a significant amount of money in consultant fees. Next slide, please. So our groundwater treatment projects, we have a number of projects, as we've shown. Obviously, this is one of our top priorities, is to get these wells back online and to treat for PFAS and perchlorate, as well as VOCs. Currently in construction, we have well 201. We are anticipating well 205. We're waiting on bids to come back in another 2 weeks. And then going to construction here, in most likely starting construction by August, a shovel in the ground would be T7, U4, U6. We're currently working on them with material submittals, and we'll anticipate that they actually get a notice to proceed in about a month, and then we'll likely mobilize by early August or late July for that project. All very big. In planning and design still, we have the S wells, as well as the E wells, the new hall wells, which you will hear about later today. And then in further out in planning, you have the North Oaks, Sierra, Clark, wells 206, 207, well W9, W10, and well D. So a lot of well treatment projects, and these are all relatively expensive projects. So seeing three of those projects in construction is a good chunk of the money that we'll be using this year. Next slide, please. So again, this is just a continuation of the work we have going on. The S wells is shown down below as part of the design. This is showing the recovery of total number of acre feet recovered for the various wells. And the TNU and PFAS project is shown in the upper right-hand corner. Next slide, please. So this is the Dean Zone Tank 2. You can see the tank one there in the distance. It's going to sit right next to that tank. This is the one associated with Sand Canyon Plaza. And again, is a fair share project. It will be the exact same type of tank with the exact same designer of the tank. So it should sit well on that site. for the Sand Canyon and Dean Zone system. Next slide, please. Recycled water, we have some upgrades. We've been approved for this for a $3 million integrated regional water management grant and a $3.15 million state resources control board grant to offset the construction costs of this phase 2C. The recycled water phase 2C will be in construction next fiscal year.
These grants are pending the passing of the ordinance, right?
I think we've already received letters for...
Yeah, we have letters for both of those grants. There's nothing holding them up.
All right.
Next slide, please. Saugus wells 3 and 4. This one has been in construction for a while. The new wells are designed to replace other wells that were impacted by perchlorate. A portion of the project will be reimbursed through the settlement agreement. To date, we have been reimbursed approximately $6.4 million of the $8.3 million. Each well is estimated to produce about 2,000 gallons per minute. Next slide, please. We have a Castaic conduit. This is a bottleneck in our system. We are proposing to put in a 54-inch. Currently, there's only a 36-inch diameter pipe in that segment. The final design will continue in the next fiscal year, and hopefully we can get this out to construction before the end of the fiscal year. Next slide, please. Finally, we have our Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant underground storage tank replacement. This is actually showing the day storage tank. That little box there is our day storage of diesel and the diesel generator. Outside of that building, there is an above-ground 8,000-gallon diesel fuel storage that we use. It's replacing a below-ground diesel storage. Project is under construction and anticipated completion in October of 24. That concludes all of the slides we have for the CIP project. And with that, I will hand it back to you, Director Chair Cooper.
Thank you. There's a fair amount of information here, I think.
Liz, are there any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Seeing none.
Committee. President Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Cooper. Courtney, this is an excellent presentation. I love the way you have it organized, much easier to comprehend, although it's almost beyond my comprehension that we have enough staff to do this. And I trust that you're obviously aware of what our capability is, and I just hope we haven't bitten off more than we can chew and that we have the staff to do all this work.
We do. We'll be relying heavily on consultants for a lot of this work. We've been using different strategies, including the recent consultant list that was approved, getting a bigger bench of consultants so that we can spread the work around further. And it's going to be a stretch. It's definitely going to be challenging to do that for both engineering and operations and the other departments who also have quite a big CIP. But that's what we're here for. So, yes, we're going to do our best to meet these projects.
I noticed we don't, maybe at one time, really, I think I recall we did prioritize projects, but these all seem to be priority one projects.
Yeah, right now we are only focused on priority one. We do have project prioritization, and we have that spelled out for the next 10 years. We've done that list, working with operations, but these are all priority one. These are mostly water supply expenditures.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to go through the list and pick out something that you would question whether we need it or not. It's like, we need to do this. We need to find the resources to do it. That's what Rochelle's going to do. Okay. And you're going to have the staff to do it. So thank you for the presentation. Certainly, I would support it. We need to do this work. We need to do it. Thanks.
Director Orzovsky.
All right. So we're going to hire a lot of consultants to manage these projects. But I imagine the consultants have to report to someone here at the agency and present their findings. How does that work here?
So the projects that we have here, We have all of our staff, all of our engineering staff, the engineers, and then even down to the engineering technicians work as project managers, and they work cradle to grave. So they start from the design of the project, they hire the consultants, they work with the consultants, they review the product. Those all obviously report up to the principals as well, and sometimes the principals are running the projects, but generally speaking, our engineers are the project managers. They're the quality control for the engineers that are submitting. So we review everything in-house. We have cooperation from operations and our inspection group, who also review the plans for constructability and for future maintenance needs. And then we will redline those comments back to the engineer to make sure they're meeting all of our standards. So we treat it more along those lines, where we're project managing and not actually doing in-house design on any of these facilities.
Okay. All right. Understood. And so yeah, all these projects are priority one. Under water resources, I noted that there's a line item that's been there from last fiscal year, the water conservation education garden. You know, money has already been spent on the design of it. You know, that project, are there any projects like that that are very least likely to move ahead? And I just are just there as a line item for potential to move forward.
I would say that there are probably, I mean, not leading into each specific project, but when we have a broad category of projects, there are certain pipeline projects that are listed in there that may have less priority. They're still in the broad category. They'll go through the designing project process, and it's entirely possible that they will lose prioritization in favor of another pipeline. So it's not like they lose prioritization and disappear and we don't need the budget. Typically, they lose prioritization and another project fills its spot.
All right, understood. All right, thank you. Thank you for the detail and for the PowerPoint. Thank you, Chair.
Now I get to see this again in a couple of weeks.
Oh, intensive.
I do.
And I still, as director, our president, Martin, agree. There's a lot of work there to be done. And, you know, I can see the priorities being almost on number one, too. But I can always remember back, even taking Cascade Conduit. That was a project from years ago.
It's been here for a long time.
We keep on delaying that project for other projects. So that's the nature of how we're doing business. But we'll see it again, and I'm sure you're going to refine it some more.
We are, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
The PAYGO, jumping from 24 to 29 million for the year, I mean, we really can't do all of that. We can't do $29 million worth of work in PAYGO in a year, can we?
Actually, 59
million. Well, yeah,
so you were looking at just the engineer.
How much of the 59 million can we actually do? We budget the full amount, knowing that we can't get it all in a year.
Well, we budget the full amount because we have to be prepared to pay the full amount if we're using consultants and contractors. So when we're hiring the consultant to do a work and it's designed to be done within this fiscal year, we have to have the budget approved to be able to pay that consultant all the way through, or that contractor all the way through the project. When you run into delays due to weather, due to material supplies, that gets pushed and that project will end up in a new fiscal year and we don't spend all of that money. I am certain that will happen somewhere in there, that those delays do occur, but without the budget up front, we could run into a situation similar to what we ended up with at the treatment plant, where the contractor actually sped up. He was faster than we anticipated and anticipated him building. And we had to shift money around, as in delay a project to the next fiscal year to have the money to pay him for his work on the site. So this one does account for the fact that we are completing the projects based on our schedule. And hopefully we can keep to that schedule as much as possible.
I mean, we budgeted in there for, it was only $2 million or $3 million. For the pipeline to go over the bridge on the east end out there to
visit the canyon. Correct.
I mean, they're not going to have the bridge built this year.
Correct. They're going out to bid. We put them out in there because we don't get to control what works first. what work they're going to do first. But you're right. I don't think they're going to have the bridge to the point where they can begin our work and begin our pipeline. In all likelihood, that project will probably shift another fiscal year. But we may have to pay the city up front. The city is going to want that money, so they have it on contract before they go to bid. So that one needs to hit this fiscal year so that we can give the city the money to be able to reimburse their contractor when the contractor chooses by their means and methods that the pipeline should go in.
Now, the city in that project is loaning the money to the developer.
Except the developer was not able to move forward with the bridge, so the city has taken over the project entirely and is no longer loaning the money.
They're going to do it all on their own dollar? I mean,
with the
they're
grant,
not going to get money back from Backer?
With the grant work that they have, I don't know if they're going to get some additional reimbursement. I don't know the agreement between the developer, but I do know that this is now a city project. It's no longer a developer project.
Because I wondered if the city was getting money back from the developer as he moves on with his project, then would we recover our money for the pipeline? Because the developer was supposed to put that in.
Right, and we'll go into detail on that when we bring that back in June. But we have a reimbursement agreement with that developer to offset capacity fees that will be collected in the future for the fact that he put in a recycled water system.
Okay.
And we can use that money to offset the installation of this pipe.
So he pays it one way or another.
Right.
He pays it.
In this case, he's paying it through not getting a reimbursement due to his capacity.
And then you had a project on there, the Rio Vista Treatment Plant sewer.
Yes.
What is that one?
We have a sewer line that comes out of the backside, the west side of the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. It's exposed on the hill. You can actually see it on the way up. It's that line was starting to have some issues. It's degraded. We've lined it and done a repair, but it's not a permanent fix. And so we are looking at a permanent solution to rerun a new sewer line down that hill and permanently fix the problem.
So it was exposed with all the rains and the...
Correct.
Okay. And Rochelle has all the money for all of this.
That's why she's here.
How much do we have in PAYGO?
Well, we're anticipating about $35 million of carryover from funds that haven't been spent this year to add to funds that will be added to through rates for the fiscal year. We also have about $4.5 million of grant funds for PAYGO. There's $14 million on the debt side, but that will reduce on our PAYGO about $4.5 million. And so we'll have enough for $59 million of PAYGO, primarily because of the carryover funds. And then on the debt side, there's some opportunities, depending on the Whitaker-Burmite judgment, using a portion of that for those facilities that are on our debt list for VOCs or chlorides. And then banking the rest of it and using it in future years for capital or putting it in reserve. So those are the funding sources that we're looking at and playing with. The $14 million of grant revenues for those debt funded projects. We have a zero interest loan through the State Water Resources Control Board because we are doing the LARC pipeline. So that is a perk to the agency to get $10 million at 0% interest. So that's part of the funding sources. And then the remainder will come from the WIFIA loan.
And WIFIA, what's the interest rate on WIFIA?
It's about 4.5. It's higher than it was, a year and a half ago when we brought it, but it's still lower than the traditional bond financing.
I like the idea that it doesn't start until you start the project.
Until we take our first draw. So we can float with our reserves for a certain period of time. So depending on the timing of construction, how much construction happens up front, how much is delayed. So we can strategically spend some of our reserves before we take that first draw. Interest rates may drop by then. So we can try to plan our first draw strategically to benefit the agency as much as possible.
I just have a question, Chair Cooper, and probably for Courtney, maybe Rochelle also. The recommendation is for this committee to consider capital improvement project's budget. So this will be rolled into the full budget when it goes to the full board. That's where your final approval comes, not only of the budget, but of the project list. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, and that's why we cover it both here and then at FNA, so everyone has an opportunity to consider it at a committee that would be concerning either the project side of it or the finance side of it, and then we bring it to the full board. Nothing should be a surprise when it comes to the
board. That's the last time the committee will look at the project list before it comes to the full board as the for present approval.
Correct.
So between now and then, if you have any questions,
yeah,
please give plenty of
these are the similar, same or similar projects that we've seen many, many times during our financing scenario presentations.
That's what I see too.
Good. Okay. Anything else on that one? Very good. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you. Okay. Item six will be presented by Mark Amendaro.
Item five. We're on item five.
Item five. Mike Alvord. Oh, boy. Here we go, Mike.
You're trying to skip me?
I try.
Well, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the fact that Ryan Bai has a conflict. So I graciously offered to cover for him. So hopefully I can do the presentation justice. You saw this as a line item in Courtney's presentation. We're going to rehab Saugus Well 1, one of the two Saugus Wells. We just finished up Saugus 2, and then we're going to roll into this one. If you all recommend for approval. Next slide, please. So for those of you who don't know, Saugus 1 is on Magic Mountain Parkway across from Dapper Dan's. It's that little jut out off the road. There's not a lot of room to rehab it, similar to Saugus 2, but that's part of the reason why I think the costs are a little higher than we always expect. But anyway, next slide, please. It was drilled in 88. And for those of you who remember, we started sampling for perchlorate in 97. This well exceeded the action level at the time, and it was taken offline. Once we got the settlement agreement with Whitaker, it was brought back online with Saugus 2 for the SPTF, the Saugus Perchlorate Treatment Facility. And then it was the last time it was rehabbed was in 2014, so just 10 years ago. And it's outfitted with a liner casing. That's what was happening in 2014. And generally, wells need rehabilitation around 15 years, 10 to 20, say. But once they have a liner, they typically require 5 to 10 years because it's almost like you're rehabbing two wells, a well within a well. And it's critical to help contain the Saugus perchlorate plume. Next slide, please. The overall capacity is 1,100 GPM, and the current capacity is 750. And so we use a couple things to determine when we need to rehab. We use specific capacity. We use the actual operational pumping, and we use groundwater levels as well. And so this one is a prime candidate for rehabilitation. The two images are just an example of before and after of the perforations, the screen intervals in the casing. The one on the left is built up with debris. After they do the rehab, it looks similar to the one on the right. Next slide, please. These are just some images Ryan thought would be good to put in here. And I agree. The item on the left is the brush. So what they do is they drop a brush down inside there, and they scrape it up and down. And that's what breaks apart the tubercules and things that are on the casing. The middle picture is just the crane. We do have a crane, and we can remove pump and motors on the smaller wells. We don't have the equipment to rehab it. And on the deeper ones, we don't have a large enough crane that can remove that, because these wells go down well over 1,000 feet. And then the picture on the right is just the during the operation, during the rehab. Next slide, please. So at the Saugus too well, we rent the property from Saugus Cafe to put these Baker tanks that you see on the left. We have to do something similar. It's going to be with a different property owner. The reason why you have to have the Baker tanks is because for twofold. One, when you rehab a well, you have a lot of sediment and a lot of debris that's in there, and you want that settled out before you discharge the water. But for these wells, because they have perchlorate and there's a discharge limit of 6 micrograms per liter in the Santa Clara River, you can't discharge it. So it has to go, has to be pumped over to the Saugus perchlorate treatment facility to remove the perchlorate out of that water before it then could be discharged. The center picture is just the, I think that's the brush that they're lowering down. And then it's just another image of the crane outside of Saugus 2. Next slide, please. It does comply with the CEQA exception for existing facilities and the NEPA exclusion for routine maintenance. We used to not show NEPA because CEQA over covers that. But because of WIFIA, they want us to make sure we include that language in any kind of approval. Next slide, please. We publicly bid it. And as you can see, there were three bidders, which was nice. Saugus 2 only had one bidder, and it was awarded to Weber, who actually was the highest bidder on this one. We decided after we consulted with legal to award the contract to Bakersfield as the lowest responsible responsive bid. There were some issues with the lowest bid. One of the issues, and that drew our attention to us, and that's when we sent it over to legal initially, as well as for them to review the integrity or the responsiveness of the bid, was the one of the line items for the chemical treatment. Their bid was only $10,000. And the other two, Bakersfield and Weber, were between $160 and $180. And so we figured that that was an issue and that drew concern to us. But the reason why we decided to reject it on top of that was because, or as non-responsive, was because they missed some areas and it as non-responsive on section B, as you can see there. Next slide, please. So the budget is typically higher than the actual rehab cost, and there's a few reasons for that. One, the property licensing agreement, the $9,000, that's so we can rent the land so we can put those Baker tanks. Motor rehab is always spent, and the reason why those are blue is because those are definitely going to be spent. We have to rehab the motor and the property. I guess we should put the water quality as well in blue because that has to be done. You have to take samples. Unfortunately, our lab can't run these because they are discharge water because of the turbidity that's associated with it. So we do have to outsource that. The additional standby time is, it might be spent. A portion of it definitely will be spent. It depends on the turnaround time from the lab. So once we send the samples out, work has to stop, and the contractor then has to wait until we get the results back where they can then start doing the pump tests and things like that. And then we've also contracted with Richard Slade and Associates as a consultant to help review. Next slide, please. The project supports the strategic plan B.3.1, maintain all facilities and appurtenances in a consistent fashion to achieve operational efficiency and functionality. Next slide, please. The final financial considerations. A couple things I want to point out. Whitaker will be contributing some of the rehab costs. We just don't know that yet. We're in negotiations with them, not only for this well, but also for the one that was completed, Saugus 2. But we still need to budget for the full amount until that's determined, as well as until we receive that money. But they are covered in next fiscal year's budget. Next slide, please. And I guess I need to read this whole slide. I know you can read it as well, but I think it's a requirement. I don't know, at least that's what I've been told. The recommendation is that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to find the bid from Arsenal Well Drilling Incorporated to be non-responsive, to find Bakersfield Well and Pump bid to be the lowest responsible bid, to enter into a contract with Bakersfield Well and Pump in the amount of $680,700 for the Saugus Well 1 rehabilitation and authorization, and authorize the other expenditures for the project detailed above for a grand total of $1,069,700, and find that the proposed action meets the requirements for categorical exemption under CEQA and exclusion under NEPA. Thank you very much. I think that's the last slide, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. Liz, anybody?
Seeing none.
Me? Director Orzechowski?
I'm going to ask the question that usually President Martin asks. What was the engineer's estimate for the project?
Deep subject. The contract for Saugus 2 was just under $1.8 million. And so that's what the estimate was, and that's what we budgeted. We were shocked at that price. When we went out, if you remember, we bid Saugus 2 twice. The first one, the amount was so high that we only got one bid. We said, okay, we're going to rebid it. We only got one bid again, and it was similar. It was a little lower. We removed some of the labor costs associated with pumping the water and treating it. We decided to pump it back to SPTF. So that's what we estimated. But it came in, as you can see, we're awarding the contract at $680,000. The total cost, which we probably can now reduce the CIP budget by $1 million, because we have asked for $2 million. So that, I hope that was a clear enough answer. The well rehab projects are definitely more expensive now than they've ever been.
Okay. Can I expand on that just a little?
Absolutely.
Not being an engineering project, this doesn't have an engineer's estimate. This has
an operational
estimate based off of the existing other work that we've done, and it's close to double what was actually the bid price. So I think this is a reasonable bid.
And Richard Slade and Associates provided the estimate. So it's a consultant, I guess, cost estimate. But thank you, Courtney. Yeah, it's not an engineering estimate.
Okay. And since Weber done Saugus 2, and their estimate is close to $1 million, what was the difference between them and Bakersfield? Why? Which cost was higher under Weber's bid?
Yeah, so one thing also to point out, Weber's bid for Saugus 2 was $1.4 million. So they actually dropped their price by $500,000. We don't know why they did. We don't know how they did it, but they dropped it. Some of the costs were, I think the chemical was a little higher and the standby time was a little bit higher, and just the overall rehab portion of it. The air jetting or the brushing of it was a little higher. So it was what, I think 120,000 higher or something like that, or was it 220,000? It was 680 to like 950 or something like that.
All right. Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
Commissioner, anything? Director Peterson, anything?
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Mike, thank you for your presentation. We've communicated with legal on this. You already said that. Do we expect any sort of protest from the bidder we're disqualifying?
No, and actually time has expired. So in the RFP, it says you have 5 days from the notice of intent to award. So we sent out the notice of intent about 2 weeks ago, and there was nothing.
All right. Thank you.
I've never heard of Arsenal.
It's a great question. We've never heard of them either, and Slade has never heard of them either. So for the fact, I think they're out of Fresno, for the fact that they messed up that one chemical cost amount, or I don't know what it was, but the difference between the other two bidders and their bid was $150,000. So either they're not really sure what it entailed or what. We plan to reach out to them and encourage them, because we're going to have other wells that aren't as complicated. Gita Well is one that we're going to do. And But the fact of that and the fact that nobody's heard of them locally, we did look at their website and it looks professional. It didn't look, you know, like it was just a fly by night. They looked like, definitely like a smaller company. But we want to encourage them to bid again and make sure. And we're going to discuss this with them because the one of the things I think they messed up on was the requirements for the WIFIA. And I think it was the disadvantage. There's a section in there that you have to fill out. I think they just missed it, or they just didn't understand how to fill it out. So during discussions with Zachary Scalvo with BB&K, I asked him, I said, is there anything that prevents us from calling these contractors after the fact and kind of walking them through what needs to be filled out? And he said, no, absolutely not. And he says that they have done in the past training for contractors on how to fill out appropriately fill out bids, especially when they become this complicated.
Right.
Oh, and if you could, if there is more questions, I would request that this goes on consent, if possible.
Maybe they're happy that I got the phone.
They might be. Any other questions? Seeing none, consent calendar?
Agreed.
I think so. Very good. Thank you, Mike.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Okay, item six, Mark Amontado.
Hey, good evening, Chairman Cooper. This is another one of projects that was on Courtney's presentation. So starting off, hey, my name is Mark Amontado. I am the project manager for the Newhall Wells N13, N11, N12 perchlorate and PFAS groundwater treatment improvements project. We have an item here in front of you this evening to recommend approval of a resolution authorizing a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for final design services for the Newhall Wells N13, N11, N12 perchlorate and PFAS groundwater treatment improvements project, and finding the project is exempt from the environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15303. Tonight I will present to you. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the Newhall Wells N11, N12, and 13. They're centrally located in the agency's service area along Railroad Avenue. And these three wells have a combined permitted groundwater capacity of up to 5,400 gallons per minute. Currently, only N12 and N13 are active since N11 was deactivated in 1997 due to high detections of perchlorate. Unfortunately, more recently, perchlorate was also detected in N13. So as shown on your screen, from top to bottom, N11 is up the north of your screen, followed by N13 in the middle, and then N12 is further south and is located on the same property as the Newhall disinfection facility. So all three wells are connected to a raw water main along Railroad Avenue. Currently, the main transport raw production water from N13 towards NDF, where it's combined with raw water from N12. This raw water gets disinfected at NDF and then sent to distribution. So due to many factors, it was determined that the undeveloped lot immediately south of NDF would be a prime location for the proposed groundwater treatment facility, not only for the constructability of the site, but for its location adjacent to NDF. The proposed groundwater treatment system would be introduced directly before disinfection in the overall treatment process. The proposed treatment facility will also feature ion exchange treatment, cartridge filters, and a new liquid ammonium sulfate building. And as an added benefit to treating for perchlorate, ion exchange treatment systems are also used to remove PFAS. So PFHXS, which is one of the related chemicals known as PFAS, has been detected in both N12 and N13. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the detail of NDF and the property adjacent, which the agency acquired in October of 2023. This slide shows the proposed groundwater treatment system, detailing how the water makes its way through the treatment process. So starting at the white arrow, production well water will enter the facility just north of the existing chemical injection point and travel to the new cartridge filters, shown in purple, and flow through the new ion exchange system, shown in light blue. Filtered water then travels back towards the existing chemical injection point, where chemical from the existing disinfection building and new liquid ammonium sulfate building, shown in yellow, is injected to chloraminate the water before sending the finished water towards the system. And other improvements will include paving around the site and also site security fencing. Next slide, please. So talking about the CEQA for this project is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15303, which is a class three categorical exemption that consists of small construction and consists of construction and location of limited new numbers of new small structures or small facilities, installation of small new equipment and facilities in small structures, and the conversion of existing small structures from one use to another where only minor modifications are made to the exterior of the structures. In addition, none of the exemptions listed in section 15300.2 of the CEQA guidelines would apply. In particular, the project is not located in a particularly sensitive environment and will not impact an environmental resource or hazard or critical concern where designated or mapped by law, federal law, state law, or any local agencies. Additionally, there will be no cumulative impact of successive projects of the same type in the same place over time. There are no unusual circumstances such that the project will have a significant environmental effect. There will also be no damage to scenic resources such as trees, historical buildings, rock outcroppings, or similar resource. This project is also not listed on the Cortez list. And this project will also not cause a substantial adverse change in the significance of a historical resource. With all that said, this project is exempt pursuant to a class three categorical exemption. Our consultant, Rincon Consultants, performed the environmental analysis for the proposed project and provided the recommendation of the CEQA exemption. This recommendation was also reviewed by our legal team at BB&K, and they concur that this exemption is appropriate. Next slide, please. So on October 13, staff issued a request for proposal for final design services for the Newhall Wells Groundwater Treatment Improvements Project. The RFP was sent to five engineering firms on the agency's on-call list. On November 29, 2023, one proposal was received from Hazen and Sawyer. Staff reached out to the firms that declined to provide a proposal for the project. Their responses were all very similar. Many of the projects were too busy and lacked the resource to prepare a proposal. I'd also like to mention that Hazen and Sawyer was selected to perform the planning services for this project. Hazen's final design proposal was well prepared and met the agency's standard proposal evaluation criteria. Staff from engineering and operations reviewed the proposal, and Hazen and Sawyer was selected as the most qualified firm to provide these services for the Newhall Wells Groundwater Treatment Improvement Project. The bottom of your screen shows the final engineering and design fee. So design is about $2 million. For this project was partially budgeted in this current fiscal year with $100,000, and the remainder of the final design budget is budgeted in FY24-25. Next slide, please. So the final design scope of work. This work includes Hazen and Sawyer will perform site visits. They will review existing data. They will also survey and locate any existing utilities and perform a geotechnical investigation. All of this work is performed in order to prepare construction drawings, technical specifications, and construction cost estimates for the construction of the Newhall Wells Groundwater Treatment Facility. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the project schedule. So tonight here, we are at the Engineering and Operations Committee. We intend to bring this item to the board on May 21. If approved there, staff will issue a notice to proceed to Hazen and Sawyer. Final design services are scheduled to be completed in 2025, February 2025. This project is in line with the agency's strategic plan objectives. D1, achieve 100% compliance with drinking water regulations, and D2, proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts on water quality, water supply reliability. Next slide, please. So staff tonight is recommending that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend to the Board of Directors to approve adoption of a resolution authorizing a purchase order to, a purchase order for final design services for the Newhall wells N13, N11, N12 perchlorate and PFAS groundwater treatment improvements project to Hazen and Sawyer for an amount not to exceed $2 million and find that the project is exempt from the environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15303. And if appropriate, I'd like to request this item be considered on the consent calendar for the May 2021 board meeting. This concludes my presentation. Thank you. And I'll bring it back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you, Mark. Liz, any questions from outside or?
Seeing none.
Good. Questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Thank you, Mark, for the presentation. And thank you for the explanation of how you handled the one bid issue with our on-call. So I'm curious about the process. You advertised on Planet Bid, but you also notified the on-call engineers that this is out to bid, or?
Yes, correct. Yeah, so typically we Planet Bid does their own notification, but also, as the bid is advertised or as the RFP is advertised, I reach out to the PMs or the people that I know from these engineering firms to let them know, hey, this is out, just as a friendly reminder.
So it does sound like we did our due diligence, and I'd have no question about Hazen and Sawyer. They're a good company. When we get a proposal like this, do we get it a proposal where they show you the labor for each of the tasks on the proposal, the staffing, who's on it?
Correct. Yes, we do. Yep.
And so we're comfortable with that.
Yeah, we are. Correct.
All right. Well, good. I'm happy to move it to consent.
Yeah, and I'd also like to mention this work is performed on T&M. So if we don't spend the budget, then obviously we don't pay the entire amount. So,
questions, Director Orzovsky?
The 2 million is a very round number here. not that it's not justifiable, but so in their spread in their analysis of what is cost of how much, I imagine that the bid, just like President Martin mentioned, said details specifically what is the cost for each item, surveys, plans, drawings, and so forth. And you and your team have reviewed that in specific detail and come to the conclusion that everything is correct. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. Their actual proposal was slightly under. It was around 1.8. And we also just like to have a buffer in there as well on our side for any additional scope.
It's a not to exceed number.
Oh, not to exceed number. Okay. All right. Okay. I didn't see that. So their bid is 1.8.
It's something like that. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I would like to specify this is not a bid. It is a proposal price on T&M. So you will see some rounding in there as well from a consultant, just because they know they're going to be used T&M, but we, as President Martin pointed out, they also have the cost schedule for staffing that we can monitor and track based off of the hours that are used for each of those staff and make sure they stay appropriate as well. And so at the end of the day, ideally, we are under the T&M number. And then we do, as Mark said, we added a cost for staff, our own staff time to review the project and get it to completion for project management.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it comes out to a nice, perfect round number, because engineers like round numbers.
Who doesn't?
That's right.
Okay, back to you, Chair.
Very good. Director Peterson, anything?
No, nothing.
Nothing? Just a question, Mark. The cartridges, we haven't used that before. Is that correct? Is this just for the VOC?
No, that's to... it's a pre-filter before it gets into the ion exchange system. I think our other treatment facilities have bag filters. I think this was a request from operations too. And actually, I think I'm mistaken. NWALS also has cartridge filters as well. So
they're not GAC filters. They're just a particle filter.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Anything else for Mark? Seeing none. Mark, thank you very much. Consent calendar. I mean, this is another PFAS project. Everybody should. Okay, good. We'll move it on to consent then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And as always, we're always prepared to present if somebody does.
I would say there's never a guarantee, but we try. Hey, item 7, Elizabeth Sobzak. Elizabeth?
Good evening, Chairman Cooper, committee members, and members of the public. My name is Elizabeth Sobczak. I am associate engineer at SCV Water. I am a project manager working on Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, mechanical shop, and access road paving project. Tonight, I am pleased to present this project to obtain a recommendation for approval of adopting resolution authorizing purchase order to Kennedy Jenks Consultants for planning services for this project and finding that the project is categorically exempt from CEQA Environmental Quality Act pursuant to the CEQA Guidelines Section 15262. And next slide, please. The project is located on the agency Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, which is shown on this map as a red star, on this vicinity map. Next slide, please. The scope of work for this project includes construction of mechanical shop, improving drainage condition near plant water tower, and paving plant access road. The access road from Newhall Ranch Road past the gate, it's currently unpaved gravel road, and this project will improve the road condition by installing the new pavement connecting with existing pavement by the plant drain beds. Mechanical shop structure will be constructed for the agency fleet equipment repairs and maintenance. Next slide, please. Planning services for this project will include the site visit, data collection, its review, conducting soil, geotechnical investigation and pad calling, providing topographic survey, and preliminary design consisting of 30% of the design also will be specified, will include to specify permits requirements, estimated construction costs, and CEQA and NEPA support. Next slide, please. In January this year, staff issued request for proposal to six of the agency on-call consultants using and advertising the project on the Planet Beats. In February, we received two proposals from Kennedy Jen Consultants and from Lienro. Staff evaluate the received proposal. Evaluation team consists of the staff from the engineering service section, operation and maintenance, and finance departments. The proposals were reviewed, and the Kennedy Gen consultants were selected based on responsiveness, project understanding, responsibility, detailed scope of work description, and project schedule. Next slide, please. Our consultants, BBK, evaluated CEQA status for this project and concluded that approval of purchase order to consultant for planning services for this project authorizes preparation of feasibility and planning services studies and does not constitute as the approval of construction of this project. Therefore, the project is exempt from California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to Class 3 categorical exemption per CEQA guidelines section 15262. Next slide, please. Purchase order award phase is that today we're presenting this project for approval to the Engineering and Operation Committee. And on June 4, we are planning to go to the board. Based on the board of directors approval, the notice of notice to proceed is anticipated to be issued to consultant in June this year, and the planning services planning work should be completed by the end of December this year. The award of planning services contract will meet SCV Water two strategic plan objectives: to update and carry out capital project related to the water system reliability and sustainability, and to maintain facilities and appurtenances in consistent fashion to achieve operational efficiency and functionality. Next slide, please. Therefore, the staff recommends that Engineering and Operation Committee recommends that Board of Directors approve adopting a resolution authorizing General Manager or Chief Engineer to award a purchase order to Kennedy Jenks Consultant for planning services for amount not to exceed $240,000 for the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, Mechanical Shop, and Access Road Paving Project, and found that the project is exempt from environmental review under the California Quality Act pursuant to the CEQA guidelines, section 15262. This will conclude my presentation. I would be happy to answer any question. I would like to also ask for this agenda item to be placed on consent calendar if this is appropriate.
Very good. Thank you, Elizabeth. Liz?
Seeing none.
Seeing none. Committee? Director Wazowski?
Thank you, Ms. Salcha, for your presentation. Liz, can you go to page 3 of the presentation? That's the map. Ms. Salcha, regarding the pavement, I imagine that'll be wide enough and strong enough to accommodate our heaviest vehicles.
Of course, yes. This is the requirement, basic requirement. We planning this road to be 20-25 feet wide. Obviously, the planning services would conclude what is the best for this area, and the thickness of the asphalt and the base would be constructed and designed accordingly to include the heavy load of our equipment driving on this road.
And also any emergency vehicles as well, right?
Of course.
Excellent, excellent. And can you remind me on this map, where is the helipod located here?
Helipod is located. Do you see the on the slide right hand, the red square or smaller rectangular.
Yes.
So it will be below. There is the area for helicopters to land to use the water in case of the fire.
Okay, excellent. Okay, thank you. Back to you, Chair.
President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. Thank you, Elizabeth, for the presentation. Following up on Vice President Ozahusky's comments, would you consider including in the planning and then in the bid package an optional bid item for extending that pavement down to Newhall Ranch Road? Or is that not felt to be necessary?
There would be not necessary because from the gate, we would be installing the constructing the pavement from the gate to the drying beds. When on the slide was shown just a moment ago, it's in the yellow area. However, the area you mentioned from the gate to the road is currently concrete, very nice concrete pavement, which holding very well, and it was constructed a few years ago, so there is no need for improvement.
Well, that's already paved.
Yeah, so okay. When you see this whiter color from the road, it's a concrete, then at the end of the concrete pad is a gate, and then yellow area, it's the proposed paving.
Okay, good, excellent, thank you.
Director Peterson, anything?
It's the first time I've seen a mechanical shop discussed in that area. Is that in the planning budget?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It was requested by our operations staff. Mm-hmm. So instead of sending for our fleet equipment repairs and maintenance, sending outside, so we will do this in-house.
Yes.
And there's an increase in the facilities budget for that project. And that was included in the prior slides presentation. One of the revisions to the many revisions.
I understand. So, and the engineering work to be done by Kennedy Jinks is to site that building, or is it to size it, or what is that? What is their purpose?
Yes, in our proposal we issue, we outlined as the general idea that we would like to have this mechanical shop to be about 60 feet by 46 structure. The structure could be the building, or to be a structure which could be purchased as the convex structure.
The engineer's responsibility would be to design the pad for that structure to accommodate either of those options.
I understand that one. Okay, thank you.
So this isn't the full design of the building. This is just the planning.
Correct.
The needs for the building.
And to give alternatives, because we have two different options for design either. As Elizabeth said, we have either a structure, a building that we build there, or we use a prefabricated Connex facility or warehouse, basically,
yeah,
in that location. But both of them will need to be designed and laid out for, on a preliminary level, the structure of the pad.
So this part would be the planning need of what the building needs are and what needs to go in it.
Correct. So, and then we will have another one that will complete the environmental and actually develop the final design.
In the final design. Because I think we'd looked a number of years back about expanding the building that we had.
Yes.
The existing shop, and I guess that's no longer the case. That'll be moved to fleet or something. Right. That would be new. And the other question I had is down at the bottom of the concrete road where it comes into Newell Ranch Road, are we going to have to put in a turnout there? if we start using that road?
Traffic.
Well, we do use it, but it's only a right in and right out. And I don't think we have plans at this point, unless I'm on Courtney, to do anything there with the intersection.
The city won't require us to do a turnout there.
It does have a little area that has a pull off of the road. It's a lined area that you pull off before you turn.
Okay.
It's not a designated turn lane or anything else, but it's also not a continuation of the curb and parkway.
Yeah, we did get that during the design of New Holland, truly.
So most people who turn out there, that's their slowdown. They pull into that and then they turn up the road. And so I don't think we've had any issue with traffic in that area. I'd be surprised if they require anything.
Okay.
Originally.
I would like to add that from the practical side, that this site, which we're calling also the back site access road to the plant, it's used for our projects by the contractors when they're delivering equipment and materials, and also by our staff for the plant needs, and there is no problem. This concrete access road, it's really in the very good condition, and the access from the New Hall Ranch Road is very easy. So for now, we're not seeing any need to for this road to be revised. It's really working well.
Okay, any other questions for Elizabeth? No. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. It's appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you.
Consent, it's only 240,000.
There a drop on that way that definitely needs a pavement, so for sure consent.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Item 8, moving to Moran.
Maren, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here. Just couldn't say anything, so he didn't pop up.
I was waiting for the slide, sorry. Good evening, Chairman Cooper and members of the committee. I'm Yoganathan Thirumaran, and I go by Maren, and I'm the project manager for the Smythe Dry Waterline Improvements Project. We have an item in front of you this evening to recommend approval of adopting a resolution to reject all bids for this project. Next slide, please. This is the location map of the project. It's situated just north of the New Hall Ranch Road. Project pretty much starts from the intersection of the Dickerson Drive and Smythe Drive to approximately 1,400 feet to the west on Smythe Drive. It's right next to Valencia High School. And we are basically replacing roughly like 1,400 feet of 14-inch PVC pipe with 16-inch ductile pipe. This project is part of the pipeline replacement program. Next slide, please. The construction bidding for this project basically followed our standard agency bidding process. Project was advertised on Planet Bids from February of this year to April. In addition, it was also advertised in the local newspaper, The Signal, on three different dates, as you see here on the slide. Bids were electronically opened at 2 p.m. on April 3rd. And as you see here on this table, we received bids from only one contractor. The bid from Blois Construction meets all the requirements per the contract documents. However, their bid is significantly higher than the engineer's estimate, which is $2 million. The difference was roughly $3 million. We checked with some of the other contractors who did not bid on this job, and they all mentioned that they are very busy and didn't have the resources at this time. We are continuing to investigate and planning to meet with several contractors soon
to get some feedback before we go out to bid again. We are also considering combining this project with another project to increase the pipeline footage being replaced and re-advertised in the future to potentially get some cost benefits. Next slide, please. I would like to point out that CEQA does not apply for the proposed action tonight. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors approve adopting a resolution to reject all bids for the Smythe Drive Waterline Improvements Project. This concludes my presentation, and if appropriate, I would like to request this item to be considered to be placed on the consent calendar on the June 4th board meeting. Thank you, and I'll bring it back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Very good, Moran. Liz, anything?
Seeing none.
Questions from the committee? Director Orzovsky.
Just a question. So what's the scope of the project, the pipeline replacement or improvements?
The
PVC. Correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But ductile iron pipe.
Yeah, replacing existing 14-inch PVC with 16-inch ductile iron pipe of approximately 1,400 feet.
Got it. Okay.
Back from Jim. Director Peterson, anything?
I do remember a couple of nice breaks in that line.
I do too.
We've had the breaks mostly along Dickinson, which has been replaced now. Smythe has had one or two breaks, but not nearly as much as Dickinson.
That was around for those. So
yeah. I would say the price that Blois came in at, we could fix the and replace the pipe on an emergency basis rather than the traditional cost of going out to bid. The cost was just exceedingly high for that work. We didn't feel it was realistic for the work that was being done.
You could get a time and materials to 2.5 times what the engineer does.
$3,500, that's pretty high.
That's
Blois was the only one to walk the project in the project bid. So when we went out for the project, they're the only ones who walked. We have a feeling that they probably had an idea they might be the only ones to bid.
And I know Steve Lillies. So yeah.
Great.
Okay, so we'll reject the bid. Does this, this may need something besides consent, do you think?
I actually think it could be consent unless you feel like there wasn't enough explanation, but we'd be happy to present. It's a pretty straightforward action, and the very high cost for a lineal foot is pretty obvious that it's beyond what we can do. But we're happy to present again. It's a very simple presentation, too. So
let's try it on consent.
Okay.
It gets pulled off. I mean, you can put something in there simple that it was 2.5 times the engineer's estimate.
Yes.
And we're going to combine it with other projects.
And it was only one bidder.
And only one bidder.
And I do just want to clarify, this is set to go to the May 21st board meeting, not the June.
May 21st. Okay. Hey, anything else?
Thank you for your presentation.
Yes, thank you very much. Good night.
Night.
Item 9, Shoddy. South End Recycled Water Main Extension.
Great. Well, good evening, everybody, directors, and thank you, Chairman Cooper. This is Shadi Bader, senior engineer. The item before you this evening is to recommend a resolution to award the construction contract to Ferrer Construction with two purchase orders for the construction of the South End Recycled Water Main Extension, the Phase 2C Reach 1 project. Next slide, please. So here's a general location map showing the project alignment, the South End Recycled Water Main Extension Phase 2C. Next slide, please. So this project will connect our existing Phase 1 pipe in the Old Road and Valencia Boulevard. The pipeline is about a little bit over 12,000 feet of pipe with sizes ranging from 8 inches to 24 inches in diameter. Some of the targeted users are College of the Canyon, CalArts, Valencia Golf Course, Vista Valencia Golf Course, some HOA meters, and also some city median meters as well. It's good to note that we will be receiving about $6 million in grant funds for this project. About $3 million will come in from IRWIM. A little bit over $3 million will come in from the State Water Resources Control Board. Next slide, please. So this project was advertised online on Planet Bids on December 21st, 2023. This project was also advertised in the Signal newspaper on three separate occasions back in January. Bids were electronically received and opened on Planet Bids on April 10th of 2024. We did receive two construction bids, with Fair Construction as came in as the lowest apparent bidder in an amount of $13,819,311. The engineer's estimate for this project is about $14 million. And we have also worked with Fair Construction in the past. They constructed the Phase 2B, and they completed that project successfully. Also, we'd like to note that this project will help meet the agency's strategic plan objective, number B.2.1, which is the update and carry out capital projects related to water system reliability and sustainability. Next slide, please. So Worthen Kern, the designer and engineer of record for this project, has provided a proposal to provide engineering services during construction and the amount of $500,000. Next slide, please. M&S Engineers Incorporated also submitted a proposal to provide construction management and inspection services during construction in the amount of $1.2 million. It's good to note that both Worthen Kern and M&S, the proposal are on a time and materials basis. Next slide, please. Here's our anticipated schedule for this project. This evening, we're presenting to you the Engineering and Operations Committee. And if you choose to recommend this project to the board, we are proposing to take this to the May 21st board. And if the board chooses to approve this project, we anticipate issuing a notice to proceed early in June of 2024. With 450 calendar days of construction, we should be complete with this project around September of 2025. Next slide, please. So with that, staff requests that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt a resolution awarding a contract to Ferrer Construction Corporation for the South End Recycled Water Main Extension, the Phase 2C Reach 1 project, in the amount of $13,819,311, and authorize the General Manager to execute a purchase order for engineering services during construction with Worthen Kern for an amount not to exceed $500,000, and authorize the General Manager to execute a purchase order for construction management inspection services with M&S Engineers for the amount not to exceed $1.2 million. So with that, I have completed my presentation, and I'll hand it over back to you, Chair Cooper.
Very good. Thank you, Shadi.
Any
questions? Committee.
An observation. Shadi, I wonder if the same estimator from Beloit did this one that he did the Smythe Drive project. This is about $1,100 a foot.
Yes. And as you noticed, the two bids came in really close and they were very tight. I mean, they were about 1% between each other. So it's really good to see that. And it was right about the engineer's estimate. So it's a really good solid bids from both. And I'm really glad to see that.
Good job. Thanks, Shadi.
So Shadi, how many years have you been working on the design of this pipeline?
Yeah. It's funny you ask that. I think the originator is right there sitting across from you. Keith, I think him and Brian. I don't know if you remember that exhibit that he showed a few years ago. They started the Phase 2C a few years ago, but I'm really happy to see it. We're almost there. We're almost up to the construction side. And the good story about this project is we're getting almost 45% of it in grant funds. And that only goes to show how hard our staff really worked to get grants between water resources section and staff of engineering. It takes a lot of effort to apply for these grants, and I'm really happy to see that, and it's going to benefit the ratepayer and SCV Water. So that's always it's a good story to tell. And yeah, looking forward to construction of Phase 2C and hooking people up in a few months. So we're almost there.
Almost there, yes. Thank you.
In fact, I think this is the second grant on that project because we used the grant money for another project when we got it the first time. Yeah. But that's okay. We're back on track. Yeah. Anything, Eric Dorzowski?
No.
Very good. Shadi, thank you very much. And maybe we'll see this one get going this year.
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Getting about dinner time. So
I'll be fast.
That's my no, that thing was so old I couldn't even. Item 10. Mr. Abercrombie.
Just a few things to point out. Year to date, this water year, rainfall has been about 22.6 inches. And, you know, that pales in comparison to last year, which was over 40. But I did just for grins look at the last 22 years worth of history. And there were only eight years during that time where the rainfall was more than the 22. Really? 6 inches. So,
what did the article say? We have more than Seattle this year.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Production wise, as I've reported before, we are still continuing to take high levels of import water because we have it available. And so our mix year to date is about 66% coming from import. Looking at water levels, this is getting to be old, but we have 17 wells that have either broken or are sitting at historical high levels this past month or in the month of March. And in general, all water levels are looking really good still.
Okay.
And that's my report.
Very good. Any questions for Ms. Abercrombie?
Seeing none.
Nope, I have none. Seeing none. Thank you, Keith. Mr. Mayo,
you have in your packet the capital improvement projects. I know we still have on here several projects that are at 99 or 100% pending closure, but we are actively working on those. We're trying to get them all closed out before June 15th, and we can record them before closed for this fiscal year. So the Magic Mountain pipelines, we have to get some final invoicing from them. The Vista Canyon Recycled Water Main Extension, we should be very near completion and close that out. I think we're just waiting for a final piece of paperwork from that. So hopefully we can close out some of those last remaining projects on the list and make room for the new projects we're starting.
The list gets bigger and bigger.
Okay. Well, wait till we get to the next one.
Yes. Liz, anything?
Seeing none.
Me? Nothing? What do you want to move on to item 12, third-party funded agreements?
Item 12 is third-party funded agreements, primarily developer agreements for the work that is going to be done. It is a pretty extensive list. We are also working diligently on closing any of these we can, but they are definitely opening faster than we are closing them. So we will try to present at the next E&O meeting a full presentation of where the development is at and show you the various maps. A lot of this is small development. We have a lot of infill. We have, for some reason, 4 Chick-fil-A's coming in to the agency, but it's 4, and so only 1 Starbucks. Who knew that Chick-fil-A would beat out Starbucks and coming in for new development? But we also have a lot of new projects up at Mission Village, still expanding out there, finishing out their Mission Village component, and then moving on to the other components on that site. So a lot of active projects on this list, and that I'll hand it back to you.
Very good. Questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Committee?
Any submitted plan suggestions for Westfield Mall? Or
The only thing we have is the preliminary environmental for the zoning change from the city itself. And the city is running that project. No submitted plans or developer action on that project. And it won't even show up on our developer list when we bring it because it's not a project of us yet.
Okay. All right. Back to you, Chair.
And I did see in the paper there's 80 units going to go up over off of Valencia Golf Course.
Okay. That hasn't come in yet either.
Is that going to happen?
Yeah, I don't. The city can't stop it.
TPC or
no, no at Valencia.
Vista.
No,
Bigby.
Yeah. That would be the damn on Social Security.
Oh, that would be the Aitland Hills.
It's a 57-foot high building.
Oh, yeah, that's
80 units.
No, we haven't seen that yet.
And the city doesn't have any say, so it's under the state law thing.
We haven't seen that one yet.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, the planning calendar.
We have the planning calendar attached to here. We have a couple busy months, definitely going to have a very busy June and a very busy July. We also have attached the look ahead for the next fiscal year, and that includes a very busy September. Obviously, those things will be flexible, and we'll be trying to balance out those as much as possible. But there are, as you saw from the earlier presentation on our capital improvement plan, I would expect that we will actually be fleshing out with even more projects on some of those dates, certainly as we go along through that calendar. Thank you.
Any questions outside?
Seeing none.
Committee?
Busy.
Yes, it is. Okay. Mr. Abercrombie, general report, treatment, distribution, operations, and maintenance.
All right. Liz? Tonight, I just wanted to give you a real brief presentation about a specific project that the operations group worked on this week. As you know, probably our biggest or most significant responsibility is water quality and ensuring that the quality of the water is appropriate when it reaches the customer's taps. And one of the big ways we do that is disinfection. Historically, disinfection happens at the source, it happens at the wellhead, or it happens at the treatment plant, and some of our system is a long ways from those places. So we have tanks where water has been lifted four or five times, you know, and it's miles and miles away, and that has historically presented challenges that has required our water systems group to go to tanks, climb tanks, add chlorine, and do things to boost the levels back up at those remote distances. So one of the means of sort of mitigating that are residual management systems or reservoir management systems, some people call them, but these are essentially disinfection systems that are located at reservoirs. So you can put one of these at a facility, and we are routinely now building those at remote reservoirs when we build new reservoirs. And historically, I think we have about 10 existing or in the works planned physical RMSs that service about 16 tanks. As you know, we have well over 100 tanks. So there's still the need periodically to go out and ornate tanks. So our staff had been looking at the possibility of having a portable RMS unit to when you start having an issue, because the issues aren't like all year long. You have an issue at one tank at a particular season or a particular time of the year. Then you have issues at other tanks. And so they were looking at this system. Next slide, please. So they looked at these RMS systems, and you can buy them online. There's these samples here are systems that you can buy ready-made, ready to install. They're fairly expensive. They cost upwards of $180,000. And so next slide, please. So staff looked at saying, well, we can do that ourselves and we can, do it better. But part of the problem with the ready-made system is they come with their the pumps they want to install, the sensors and analyzers they want to install. And we have experience that maybe tells us we don't like that pump. It doesn't work. It doesn't perform. We want to use this pump and so forth. So staff looked at doing this themselves. And so the project, besides the effort of getting an RMS at the end of the system, it was a good project because it brought a lot of people from across the company together on a specific task. Operations just couldn't do this themselves. They can't do electrical work, so we had to use our electrical group. And they can't do the SCADA work, so they had to use the SCADA group to be involved. So it was a good opportunity for us, very small, about five guys that worked together to build this facility or this system. We had a trailer. We didn't have to buy the trailer, but we're showing you the cost of what it would have cost if we had to buy a trailer. And so, it would have cost about $70,000 to build this system. Some of the pieces we already had, and so we just repurposed. SCADA cabinet we repurposed. We picked the various pumps and generator and parts and labor and so forth. The next slide, please. So this is a photo of the system, nearly complete. And so in the left slide there, you'll see some of the analyzer equipment. The right slide will show the LAS or liquid ammonium sulfate tank on the right and the sodium hypochlorite tank on the left that you use to generate your ammonia or chloramines to treat the tank. Next slide, please. So it took us 9 months to build it. Not that we were building it for 9 months, but these guys have regular jobs and they had all kinds of other things that they do. And so this was just sort of a little project that they would spend a few hours on here and there when they had time. And so these guys actually, put this system together based on, they're very familiar. They're the ones that fix our existing RMSs and keep them running. So they know how they work. They know what doesn't work in that RMS package that we bought last time and what new equipment or new pumps we had to put in. And so this was a effort to create something themselves. It was a great team effort between the groups, and it turned out well. And I just want to give these guys kudos for building this system and getting it in place. We'll place it at a tank where it needs to be placed. It'll operate for the week or so that we need it there. We can move it somewhere else. Estimates are, we haven't used it yet, unless they just in the last few days used it. But we estimate it could be used typically at a tank site for about a week before we'd have to refill any of the chemicals.
That's great. This is amazing.
That's great. Questions for Mr. Abercrombie?
Seeing none.
This is phenomenal. Really good. Good job. Just out of curiosity, is there enough extra equipment laying around to build additional sets and lease them to other agencies?
No. Probably not. I did ask, I asked the team leader, Adrian, who was sort of the leader of the group, that question as to, are we going to build another one or do we need more? Or whatnot. And he thinks right now one's probably sufficient for our purposes. I'm not sure it would be a money-making venture for us to work on it and try to build something for others. But it's definitely something that made sense for us to build for ourselves and to use all the knowledge we've accumulated over the years of making systems work and building a system the way we want it from the get-go.
Yeah, we built some of those at Metropolitan that we would use. We had a bunch of them we built, but they're much larger, large tank on a very heavy duty trailer because it was a large volume of water. Where they really came in handy was on shutdowns. You could put sodium thiosulfate in them and then dechlor water you're discharging into the creek, and that really became handy.
I'll mention that to the guys.
Have their work been documented? Not assembly procedures, but just like pictures or
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are a lot of pictures. There's probably a better job we could do to document, you know. I'm not sure anything's on paper to where another group of people could come in and just automatically build that without some input from those guys. But, you know, the systems that we currently have and use is sort of the basis for their knowledge and understanding of these RMF systems. And so that led to this.
Two of those gentlemen that in the picture I remember from Duval County Water District, and that's 20 plus years right. experience.
A lot of experience. Yeah.
20 plus.
Hey, and last one, Mr. Mayo, General Report on Human Services.
I will keep it very short. I just wanted to highlight, I mentioned it during the capital improvement plan, that we have a limited term inspector that we're bringing on board. Specific projects that they are assigned is the Backcountry Reservoir and the Backcountry Pump Station. The bids for those two projects we did go out to get proposals for the construction management, and they were over $2 million each. So it was $4 million in construction management services that we are handling by a limited term employee for the duration of those projects, well, for 2 years of those projects. In addition to that, we had previously approved and have been recruiting for a new inspector. We have 11 applicants for that position, and we will start interviews for that shortly. We are trying to backfill that in the inspection department. Currently, because of the amount of development we have, the inspection department has been mostly out on developer jobs. They're almost 100% paid for by developers. We have been stepping in to do the CIP pipeline job, and we are working, our inspectors are working on closing out that project now, getting the final tie-ins together with a lot of help from operations crews out there. So a good collaborative effort from our inspectors in the operations group. But having another inspector on staff, hopefully we can make that a more permanent basis where we're not paying the consultants the higher rate for the inspection, and we can start utilizing our own in-house inspection for pipeline site projects. It's hard to assign them to a larger project that's going to take 18 months unless you do it on a more project-specific basis or you have a kind of dedicated construction manager. The construction manager, I listed them as a limited-term inspector, but the reality is they're a registered engineer who's done a extensive history in construction management before. And then lastly, I want to mention that we have been working with an intern. We had budgeted for two, and we've ended up extending the intern that we have because they didn't get very many hours early on in the year. They were going to school most of the time, so we only had them for limited hours, and they wanted to continue through the summer. And the intern we had scheduled for the summer backed out, so we are going to continue to use this intern throughout the summer. And they're really helping out with getting our standards up to date and doing some CAD drawings for us, and then they're gaining a lot of experience in how a public agency works. So when they are back, they had to have some surgery. When they are back from their surgery, they'll be working in the development services group, and I'll be sure that they come into this committee and we introduce them, and you get to know them a little bit. But it's been nice having an intern in the office to work with us, and I know we plan on continuing that program. That's what I have for engineering updates.
Very good. Did they come from UCLA or...?
They came from CSUN.
CSUN, not good. Yeah. Right now at UCLA, they're not graduating a lot of people.
The one who backed out got another offer. They were coming from the East Coast, and that's why they could only do the summer. And they got an offer from an engineering firm on the East Coast that offered to pay for their final year of college. And we couldn't compete, oddly enough.
Wow. Never heard of that.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, yes. Public comment?
Thank you.
Hey, question for Courtney.
Yes.
Real quick, Courtney, how is the acclimation to the amongst the contractors to working with our standard plans now?
We are sticklers. We have a set of plans we want, and we have a process that we follow. We understand that it can be a little onerous right at the beginning, but ultimately, a lot of the contractors we've been meeting with understand after they've gone through the process, how much better it is, because things like doing all of your submittals up front, we get a lot of pushback on that initially. We've even simplified the submittal process, but they fight us on getting all the submittal approvals before they go out to construction. And then they go out to construction and they realize they aren't stopped waiting for any material submittal or waiting for anything else. And it's things like that. It's things like doing a disinfection plan where everyone approves and agrees to it. When it comes to them setting it up in the field and it's not going to meet an AWWA standard for flushing velocity, we're not holding them up. We already have a plan. We've already talked it through and we know it can meet what you would say. And so it is challenging, and we are going to continue to meet with the contractors. We're actually having a developer meeting as well, where we're having all the developers in this room next week, merchant builders, for them to provide suggestions to us on how to improve our plan check process. So we are willing to take criticism and willing to improve our process, and we're going to continue to reach out both to the development community and the contractors. But what we've seen is that the process takes a little bit in getting used to, and they may not have the same enforcement in all other agencies. Some of the other agencies don't enforce to the same level, but we're going to be following the AWWA and follow the DDW requirements and try to get the contractors on board to get everything up front to make it so that when they go to construction, construction moves smoothly. That's our ultimate.
They'll hit you up on turnaround.
They'll
hit you up on turnaround. That's the big thing that they're on now. Of course, they work on something for a year and they give it to you and they want it back in the meetings. That's the way developers are.
But we've had a lot of ways. Sorry, Gary. We've had a lot of opportunities to improve our turnaround time with their involvement and with an understanding. When we met last time with the Economic Development Council, we have meetings with them once a quarter. And they bring in some of the developers, and we put back to them saying, we can improve our turnaround time if you allow us to reject plan sets when they come in. And that means you are responsible for QAQCing your engineer. If they're going to submit a set of plans that can't be built, we're not going to plan check, we're going to reject them. The clock doesn't start. So that's your responsibility, is make sure your engineer meets our basic comments and goals and then submit. And so far, at least with the one developer that we started that with, it's been working out pretty well. We've rejected two plan sets, and they come back a week later, all fixed. So evidently having the developer involved in that loop. The other thing we do is we target having two plan checks with a third plan check as a verification that everything's been done. And if there are still comments that have gone unaddressed, we have the developer come into our office, and we meet with them, the engineer, together to explain why the comments are not being addressed. And that tends to get them fixed pretty quick too.
Good.
So we have methodologies in place that we've discussed with the developers.
So the other part I was going to ask about is, are all of our inspectors now on the same page? Because I know when we first started operations as SCD, they came from different agencies.
We do. They are on the same page. We are really, really striving for consistency out in the field. So our supervisor, Josh Gillum, has been working with even doing little items like having the inspectors individually each week. They meet on a daily basis first thing in the morning. And each week they will go through one of the inspectors' dailies and review them and see what improvements can be made, see what's missing, where the consistency will be lacking. And really, that tells the whole story of the job. And so by being able to go through their dailies and manipulate them and get them all on the same page and have not just the supervisor providing comment, but having your peers also say, hey, you're missing this, and I'm going to get flack for it in the field out here if you don't start doing it. So they all understand that they're following the same process. What we don't want is any one inspector saying, well, I want that inspector because he's going to let me get by. But that's not our case.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Oh, I would have lost my bet. I would have.